Jane still wouldn't notice him, even if his hair was on fire. But then one day he went to that science lab, that mutated spy.
Hello, and welcome to a special episode of FW Presents, the anthology show of the Fire & Water Podcast Network. This episode is another installment in the Mary Marvel Marching Society podcast crossover of 2021. Try saying that three times fast. There's something like 17 different podcasters contributing to this massive crossover throughout the month of March. And honestly, I wouldn't even be doing this myself, except Derek Crabb has some really damaging blackmail on me, but... Now, if you haven't figured out already, I'm one of your hosts. I am the Irritable Shag, and I've got a very special co-host with me today. This gentleman is a longtime friend of the Fire & Water Podcast Network. He's a creator and senior quiz master of The Big Quiz Thing, which is a live trivia spectacular for corporate and private events. He's a former editor for Rolling Stone and Time Out New York. He's competed on Jeopardy, and he's a fellow podcaster. He's one of the hosts of I Don't Get It, the Pop Culture Get Off My Lawn cast. So with this many qualifications, obviously, I have invited him to talk about a ridiculous parody comic from the late 1980s. Folks, please help me welcome Mr. Noah Tarnow. How you doing, buddy?
Thank you, Shag. Great to be here. Such an honor. Such a joy. I gotta be nitpicky now. Are we late 80s or early 90s?
See, that is this bun is right on the bubble. So the cover says 90s, January 1990, but actually it was released at the end of 89. So I tend to go by release dates because that's when I would have read the stupid thing.
Yes. It's the spirit of the 90s, though. We were so eager to get out of the 80s. We were ready for the 90s, living in the wild, wild west.
I look at the 80s and I go, what the, when I think about them.
Indeed. How appropriate.
Wow. What a forced transition that was. Jeez. Yes, because we are here to talk about the ridiculous, hysterically funny parody comic that Marvel published called What The. Specifically, we are focusing on Acts of Vengeance because we are part of the Mary Marvel Marching Society podcast crossover of 2021. And instead of looking at that massive Acts of Vengeance crossover and going, yeah, I think I really want to dig into like five issues of Avengers, or I want to look at Fantastic Four. No, I'm just going for the butt and fart jokes. So that's my tactic. Now, before we get into the funny, we probably need to thank our sponsors. Folks, this episode of FW Presents is sponsored in part by InStockTrades.com. InStockTrades is your best online source for trades, hardcovers, and other collected editions, all for up to 42% off with free shipping for orders of $50 or more. Now, each episode, we pick something from the InStockTrades library that sort of relates to this. I picked specifically Acts of Vengeance trade paperback Avengers. And I did this before Noah had a chance to pick because I didn't want to have to pick something other than Acts of Vengeance. So this is the version of Acts of Vengeance that focuses on the Avengers books, because there's like 70 freaking comics in the Acts of Vengeance. So this one focuses on Avengers Spotlight, Avengers Quasar, Iron Man, Avengers West Coast, Cloak and Dagger, and then some other excerpts here and there. It's 504 pages. You could easily kill a man by hitting them with this thing. And it's published by Marvel, of course. You got writers such as Dwayne McDuffie, John Byrne, Mark Gruenwald. Artists include Dwayne Turner, Paul Ryan, John Byrne. And it's full color, soft cover. Normally goes for $39.99, but you can get it right now for 42% off. So it's only $23.19 for 504 pages. That is amazing. So if you want to get the Avengers side of the Acts of Vengeance crossover, which is, from what I understand, because I haven't read the damn thing, the bulk of the story, this would be a great place to go. Now, Noah, the way this works is I usually ask the guest if they happen to pick a selection. All the cool kids do it. And so I don't want you to feel any pressure if you didn't, but I'm just saying.
Yes, I did pick something. In fact, I was in the 80s and the 90s. I was far more, full disclosure, far more of a DC kid than a Marvel kid. So I did not read Acts of Vengeance at the time. But when I caught up with Acts of Vengeance this time, I was reminded of a DC event from the mid 90s, which is Underworld Unleashed.
So we're doing a podcast about Marvel comics and you bring a DC recommendation.
Exactly. It really struck me as the DC version of Acts of Vengeance. And yes, Acts of Vengeance came first. So, and how apropos, there is a new, relatively new 25th anniversary edition of Underworld Unleashed that just came out last November. It is available on InStock Trades. Quote, the devil gets his due as demonically powered supervillains wreak havoc in this 25th anniversary edition of the classic DC event. Neron, the ruler of hell, makes DC's villains and heroes an offer they can't refuse, dangling serious power upgrades at the cost of their souls. Who will say yes? Who will say no? And will the DC universe ever be the same? So this collects the launching off Underworld Unleashed 1-3 miniseries plus various specials. This event was was awesome. I loved it at the time. I can easily remember 5 or 6 entries in it. You know, it passed through all the different regular series. You got to see all your favorite heroes fight villains they didn't usually fight. So this trade paperback, 304 pages. It has a 90s-tastic cover by Howard Porter and Green. Oh, yeah. You know what I'm talking about.
Oh, yeah.
Originally $29.99, but in-stock trades price is $17.39. You save 42%, the exact same as the discount on Acts of Vengeance.
So let me get this right. Not only do you not bring a Marvel book, you also bring Underworld Unleashed, which is affectionately called The Book That Ruined Blue Devil, one of my favorite characters ever.
Sorry. So, I forgot about that.
You're really shooting to try and be a second-time guest here on these shows, right?
Wait, did that ruin Blue Devil, or was it the Starman issue where he was killed by, like, holy water? Because that's what I remember.
Technically, that came after Underworld Unleashed, okay, but that didn't do him any favors either.
That's my memory of that. Yeah, sorry, Shag. There you go.
It's okay. I'll just take it personal. So, folks, please visit InStockTrades.com and let them know the Fire and Water Podcast Network sent you. In addition to InStock Trades, we also need to take a second to thank you folks at home, those who support us on Patreon, because running the Fire and Water Podcast Network with so many shows requires a lot of online hosting and other services. We launched the Patreon a while back, and you folks really stepped up to help us keep the network going, and we appreciate it. So if you're enjoying shows like this, the best way to support the network is by visiting patreon.com/FWPodcast. Consider supporting the Fire and Water Podcast Network there. And at certain sponsorship tiers, you'll get mentioned on your favorite Fire and Water shows. Just like these folks, our thanks to David A. Gutierrez and Gord Tolton, and some other guy named Noah Tarnow. I don't know who that is, but he sounds like a chump. Anyway, please visit our Patreon at patreon.com/FWPodcasts. Now, we are here to talk about What The, which is like the most fun name to say ever, because you can use it for so many purposes. But this was a comic book series. The whole point of it was it made fun of the Marvel Universe. And it was very similar to the 1960s series that Marvel published called Not Brand Eck, which is interesting because when I was a kid growing up, like everyone knew what Not Brand Eck is. But nowadays, I never hear it referenced. I never hear it mentioned at all. I don't know if anyone remember, but you know, us old fogies would even remember it.
Yeah, I've heard the name, but I've certainly never seen it.
Well, Forbush Man, I believe, either came from Not Brand Eck, or at least helped make him a household name at that point. So What The billed itself as the Marvel Mag of Mirth and Mayhem. And clearly the name is a playoff of What If, combined with a little WTF, which wasn't even an acronym at that point. Now, it ran for 26 issues from mid-1988 through 1993, and each issue contained like multiple stories, basically parodying the Marvel characters and villains. For example, there were characters such as The Pulverizer, The Fantastical Four, The Revengers, Wolverina. They used Peter Parker, the Spectacular Spider-Ham. Now, they didn't create him, but they used him in the place of Spider-Man. They even had some original characters like Milk and Cookies, which is belovedly remembered. Now, here's some of the amazing things about this series. Was it really spotlighted some of the top artists and writers who worked for Marvel. There were contributions from people like Stan Lee, John Byrne, Steve Ditko, Al Milgram, June Brigman, John Severin, Terry Austin, John Bognado, Peter David, Jim Lee, Eric Larson, Al Williamson, Tom DeFalco, Joe Quesada, and so many more. It's crazy how many people were contributing to this. Now, I picked up this comic off and on off the shelves. Now, Noah, were you a reader of this one as well?
I was, although not when number 6 came out. So, I mentioned I was much more of a DC kid. I really didn't start buying Marvel with any regularity till about early or mid-1990 when I moved and I was so bored I needed to read more comics. And so I probably started around then. So I probably started around issue 10 or 11. And I think I might have seen it through to the end. It only made it to like 26, right? So
right.
Once I became a Marvel reader, I was What The reader. And I loved it. It was hilarious. And rereading it now, it holds up amazingly well. So yes, I was a What The reader.
I'm looking now at my list just to see where I started. I actually started with this issue. I didn't follow it to the end. I apparently petered off around issue 15, but I started with issue number 6, oddly enough. Now, let's just get to this. Now, you have a certain distinction, besides the fact that I've wanted to podcast with you for a while. There's a particular reason you're on this episode. And why don't you tell the people at home why that is?
Yes. So, as I mentioned, I moved in 1990, and I started reading more comics because I was bored. And not only that, one of my projects to allay my boredom was I decided to try to become a letter hack, which I guess they don't exist anymore, right?
But it's called Angry Internet Trolls now.
Yeah, which aren't nearly as much fun. But, you know, anyone who read comics in the 80s or 70s before that would know that the back page of almost every comic had letters to the editor, and you would often see the same names over and over again.
Oh, Charles Sperling.
Yes, Charles Sperling. The Mad Maple was the most famous one, I feel like, in the 80s, right?
Uncle Elvis.
Uncle Elvis, Hurricane Heron. And then, of course, did you know in the 60s, George R.R. Martin was a letter hack? You can find
no way.
You don't know this? I don't know if letter hack is true, but I've definitely seen scans. You can find some of his letters in some of the glory days of 60s Marvel comics. He shows
That's
up.
That's wild.
In. Yeah, I don't know if he was a letter hack, but he did write letters to comics that were printed. So I tried to become a letter hack. I had a goal of writing a letter to every comic I read. I probably didn't fulfill that. And I was published, I would estimate, 12 to 15 times over a three-year period.
Wow. Way to go.
Maybe even more. I can picture covers of like 5 or 6 issues that I could dig it out of my long boxes and find my name in there. However, a good point is that for many of these comics, it was not under my name. For some reason, when I started this project, I decided to use a pseudonym.
You're Uncle Elvis?
No, I'm not Uncle Elvis. I'm not the Mad Maple. I'm not none of those people. The pseudonym I came, and I don't know why, I have no idea why I decided to do a pseudonym. And there are other letters under my name, so I don't know why sometimes it is, sometimes it isn't. The pseudonym I used was Freddie Jameson, which was taken from, at the time, my favorite movie, and still a great movie, Dirty Rotten Scoundrels. And if you combine the name, Steve Martin in that movie is Freddie Benson, and Michael Caine is Lawrence Jameson. For some reason, I said, let's combine those Freddie Jameson, and that'll be my character. So my letter published in What the 13 is under the name Freddie Jameson. So you got to take my word for it. I wrote this. This was me.
We're going to have a dramatic reading, I hope.
Yes. So here you go. And I'm not proud of every joke here. Let me just say that. Okay. And, you know, as you can imagine, the letters in this comic, like the comic itself, were written for humor. All right. Hey, you. Two interrogatisms. Questions, you layman, on What the number 11. One, this issue made me laugh so hard I barfed up my spleen. This led me to wonder, exactly what does my spleen do? Do I really need it? I mean, should I bother to shove it back down my throat? Or should I just toss it in the recycling bin? Two, I know the classic superhero lore featured in What the stories, geez, get a dictionary, are a tad too bizarre to be in, quote, normal Marvel continuity. So on which earth do these stories take? Sorry, got you guys mixed up for a second. Number three. So I lied. Were She-Hulk's, well, you know what's on the cover, a joke, or does she actually have the kind of money for surgery like that? Freddie Jameson, address withheld by request. So I could read the editor's reply.
Yeah.
So the editor's reply was one. Nope. Your spleen is completely unnecessary along with 95% of your internal organs. Tell your mom and your science teacher that we said so. Two, fooey on you. Three, never a charge at the J. Byrne Enlargement Clinic.
Oh, my gosh.
There you have it. Yes, it was a John Byrne drawing of the cover of number 11. And if you go back and look at it, She-Hulk is there. And as was the style in the 90s, she is well endowed.
Is that the one with Wolverina on the cover also?
Wolverina, yeah. And there's a little like cutout with She-Hulk.
So I
half of her body.
I got a lot to say here. First of all, okay. I got to specifically talk about that cover for a second, because that was the cover I happened to be flipping through when my wife walked by. And she said, what the hell is that? Now, the irony is she said, what the? So I was pretty impressed with that. But that cover with Wolverine and She-Hulk got me in trouble. And I had to explain that this was a parody comic. But anyway.
This was recently or when it came out in the 90s?
No, good Lord, I haven't been married that long. No, this would be this past weekend.
Okay, yes, that's what I figure. I'm teasing. Yes. I don't know.
But second of all, congratulations on getting a letter printed. That's fantastic. Yeah, pretty that's cool. Awesome. Yeah. And it was very funny. I mean, I really enjoyed some of the humor in that.
No, I for the time, that was definitely a high point of my joke making. You know, and I wrote mostly to DC, but obviously to Marvel as well. I can remember issues of Batman and Green Lantern and Hawk and Dove that my letters appear in. So, yeah, it was a little hobby of mine.
That's awesome. Now, I hate to plug Michael Bailey because it just inflates his ego beyond belief.
Yeah.
But he's also, at least I think, part of the this crossover event. He and Paul Hicks recently recorded an episode of Views from the Longbox where they just specifically talked about their adventures as letter hacks.
Oh, that's awesome.
I was a minor one myself. I got printed in Dr. Fate several times, one time in Suicide Squad, one time in X-Men, one time in Flash, a few others here and there, but nowhere near the volume you did, sir. So I'm impressed, Mr. Jameson.
Yes, thank you. Yeah, why did I do that? I have no idea. Anyway, you know, I was bored that year. Don't move when you're 15 years old. It's not fun. So.
But well, you know, but there's we could totally go off in like an hour on just this topic, but there is such a thrill back then to see your name in the, whether it's Jameson or not, but to see your name in the comic because you are now part of the thing you love so much. And it becomes an addiction. It makes you want to write more and more letters.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's such a fundamental difference now where any kid could see their name on any blog, but like how many people got their thoughts on a comic book heard by anyone else. Right. It was so rare. So yeah, it was pretty exciting when I'd see it. I'd go to the comic store, and if it was a comic that I knew I had written a letter recently, first thing I'd do was flip to the letters page before I bought the comic, even if Absolutely. I knew I was going to buy it. And then when I didn't see my name, it would be a disappointment. When I did, it was the greatest thing in the world. You
know? That is exactly the same behavior I had every time I'd write to somebody. Yeah, I totally get it. All right, so we got to move past this, or we're going to talk about that all night, because I am interested in talking about that. But right now, when you talk about Acts of Vengeance, and I teased it earlier, I'm not kidding. I've never read Acts of Vengeance, and I didn't in preparation for this either. So, but here's the gist of it, folks, if you haven't read it. So this is Marvel comic crossover that started in late 1989 and ran into early 1990. Now, the core titles of the crossover were Avengers and Fantastic Four, those family of books. That's who the story was mainly about. But it spilled over into like Spider-Man and X-Men and a few others. Altogether, as I mentioned, it's like 70 comics in the crossover, which is crazy. No wonder people burned out on these things. Now, but the big gimmick is sort of like Underworld Unleashed, was that it was a wide variety of supervillains were going to face off against heroes that weren't normally part of their rogues gallery. So you get sort of an intermixing of bad guys and good guys. That was the interest. The story, getting into the details, involves a mysterious stranger who brings together some major powerhouse bad guys of the Marvel Universe. We're talking Doctor Doom, the Kingpin, Magneto, the Mandarin, Red Skull, and the Wizard. Now, it's later revealed that this mysterious stranger was Loki. All right, so. Now, as mentioned, the plan is to have certain villains attack heroes they don't usually battle. And the theory would be that since the heroes would be unfamiliar with the villains, it would go in the villains' favor. And to help these master villains, Loki also engineers a jailbreak at the vault, which I think has a revolving door, by the way, for bad guys. Anyway, they have a jailbreak at the vault so these lesser bad guys can help gang pile on the heroes. Ultimately, it all falls apart, of course it does, when the master villains fail to cooperate and they all turn on each other. Most famously is the bit with Magneto, who, as most people know, Magneto was a Jewish Holocaust survivor, and he chose to imprison the Red Skull for his actions as a Nazi. And the bad guys were ultimately defeated, and Loki was imprisoned. Now, our comic today, What the Number 6, was released towards the tail end of that crossover event, and really does its best to make fun of it and poke humor and things along those lines. And right now, we're going to go to a quick podcast promo break, and when we come back, we're going to cover What the Number 6.
I'm Bill Scurry.
And I'm Noah Tarno.
And we're both very, very old.
Well, we're both 45, but that's certainly a lot older than either of us ever planned on getting.
And we're facing the horrible prospect, nay, the reality that pop culture has passed us by.
So every week, we bravely pick one newfangled performer, artist, trend, or phenomenon that's all the rage among kids these days. Or at least among people whose brains have become less antiquated than ours. And we try to make some sense of it.
Sometimes we hate it. Sometimes we like it. Sometimes we get it. Sometimes we don't.
But always, we complain.
We are talking about Tekashi 6ix9ine.
I cannot believe that until you suggested this as a topic like 2 weeks ago, I had never heard of this guy.
A banger was just unleashed upon the American people called WAP. You know, we talked about K-pop, we talked about Cardi B, the people who are in the mold of, like, every single time they drop something on you, it's got to own the conversation. We are discussing what we do in the shadows.
This isn't my thing, but they get the details right. It's well-acted, it's funny. The mockumentary format they make work for them.
Yes, Supreme, my favorite clothing line named after a Rob Liefeld comic book character.
This is another thing I get lost on. It's like, what the f*** does authentic mean? It's a shirt. How is the shirt I'm wearing not authentic?
There is such a fetishization of authenticity in our culture.
It's I Don't Get It, the pop culture Get Off My Lawn cast.
Available on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, SoundCloud, and Stitcher. Whatever those things are.
There was an idea
to bring together a group of remarkable people
to see if we could become something more.
So when they needed us, we could make the podcasts
that they never could.
In time, You will know what it is like to cross over. To feel so desperately that the comic is right, yet to fail all the same. Dread it. Run from it. March 2021 still arrives.
Evacuate the network. Engage all defenses. And get this man a cold Mountain Dew.
Ooh, a cold Mountain Dew. I haven't tried one of those. Nah. Make it warm. Thank you.
Fun isn't something one considers when podcasting an event. But this does put a smile on my face.
Who the hell are you guys?
The Merry Marvel Marching Society. We don't know where we're going, but we're on the way.
A podcasting crossover mega event in the spirit of J.L. May. Coming in March 2021. Covering Marvel's fall crossover event, Axe of Vengeance.
A cabal of evil threatens the Avengers and the entire Marvel Universe.
Dr. Doom, the Red Skull, Kingpin, Dr. Doom, Magneto, the Wizard, Dr. Doom, the Mandarin, and Dr. Doom have banded together to pit Earth's mightiest heroes against foes they have never faced before.
An array of heroes face enemies they are totally unfamiliar with.
But who is secretly pulling the vengeful cabal strings?
And can the Avengers take down the true mastermind before his hidden scheme succeeds?
Featuring podcasts from Third Degree Burn, Back to the Bins, Avenger Spotlight, Coffee and Comics, Comic Book Time Machine, Doom Speak, Fan Holes Podcast, Fire and Water Podcast Network, Head Speaks, Into the Weird, Justice, Not Entirely Dissimilar to Lightning, a Thunderbolts podcast, Longbox Crusade, Married with Comics, The Quantum Cast, Resurrections, an Adam Warlock podcast, Rolled Spine Podcasts, and Views from the Longbox.
Marching its way to your favorite podcatchers and hosting sites in 2021.
Act of Vengeance, a true story.
All right, folks, we are going to talk about What the, which, by the way, has ! Number 6, published by Marvel Comics. Cover date is January 1990. It was on sale November 7th, 1989. Cover price is $1, four shiny quarters. Page count's 32 pages, and the cover is by John Byrne. Now, on the cover, we get it's a group shot. It's a parody of all these heroes in the center on the defensive, and they're surrounded by tons of large guns that are in the foreground circling the perimeter of the comic. So you actually can't see the people holding the guns. You just see the guns pointing at our heroes in the middle. And you get parody versions in the middle of Punisher, Wolverine, Captain America, Vision, Scarlet Witch, Wonder Man, Vindicator, Sasquatch, and Shaman, loving the Alpha Flight representation here. So the cover copy reads, "Everybody versus everybody else in Smacks of Vengeance." And then it says also, "The Origin of the Pulverizer and Man-Thang versus Swamp-Thang." So what do you think of the cover, buddy?
I think it's pretty good. I do wonder why the Alpha Flight characters are there. I mean, were they prominent in Acts of Vengeance? I don't really get it.
They got a couple appearances. And if you think about it, the cover art's by John Byrne. he did co-create Alpha
Flight. Okay. Yep. Yep.
So that
yep.
may be the reasons for them being there.
Right. And then in the little box in the upper left, you know, that little box where Marvel always had a character, they have the Man Thing or the version of Man Thing, which I find visually extremely funny.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, it's a little, the guns are a little dark. So I feel like the color is only in the center, but you know, it's John Byrne and they all got funny looks on their faces. So why not? And I think Everybody versus Everybody Else is pretty funny. So. Yeah, I've seen better What the Covers. It does get at something I really, and we'll get to this later about Smacks of Vengeance. Vision has this blissfully wide-eyed, big smile look on his face. And I don't know what that's about. I have a bigger question about Vision later. I don't know how they were writing Vision at the time. So maybe it's relevant if you were reading Avengers or whatever he was in back then. But I am curious about that. Why that look? What the meaning of that is?
Well, we should mention it's specifically the white bleached version.
Yes,
of Vision.
Yes,
and John Byrne's the one who did that. So it almost makes me think that Byrne himself had a line on what's going on here. And I think this is all, I think Byrne is still doing Avengers West Coast at this point where he's telling that story. So it must be something embedded in, you know, John knowingly mocking his own work is what I got to think.
Maybe. I think of that look of Vision as from the Captain America and the Avengers video game. Do you remember that? Arcade yeah. game where you
oh,
could
yeah.
play.
Side-scroller, yeah,
again,
right?
Right. The year I moved and I was bored, so I would write letters to comic books and go to the video arcade, and you could be Captain America, Iron Man, Vision, or who was the fourth character in that?
I knew it, but I can't, now that you actually asked me.
Hawkeye. You
okay.
shoot arrows. And Vision was pretty cool in that, and yes, he had the bleach look in that. So that's what I think when I see that. Yeah.
So for this cover, and again, this is the first What I ever bought, and for me, I always thought this was a parody of an actual cover, where all the heroes are surrounded, but I can't find it. Like, I went searching, trying to find what this is a parody of. Maybe it's just something I imagined, or just maybe my searches didn't turn up. If anyone knows, please tell me. But I couldn't find what this was specifically referencing. Now, I did just notice a coloring error, which may not have been an error, since this is What the, I don't know. But the Vindicator, who's the female member of Alpha Flight that's here holding on to Sasquatch, her chest is normally supposed to be white, like the flag, but they've miscolored it flesh-colored, so it looks like she's revealing a whole lot of skin there.
Or a boob is falling out or something. Yeah.
Now,
yeah,
again, maybe. Given that it's What the, it could have been on purpose. I'm not sure.
And all right. Wonder Man. By the way, yesterday I was talking about superheroes with my 7-year-old niece, and we were talking about Wonder Woman. She asked me if there was a Wonder Man, and I said yes, but he doesn't really have much to do with Wonder Woman. And she was asking me about him, and I'm like, I don't know. I don't even know his name. So
Simon Williams, man. Simon.
You know,
Williams.
I knew it was Simon something, but. You know, because she was Wonder Woman. Is there Wonder Man? Superman, is there Superwoman? I said, well, yeah, sort of. So those are the questions 7-year-olds ask.
Sure. Right. Oh, I believe I understand.
In the 80s, Dr. Psycho would use his powers to turn himself into Captain Wonder. That was one of the few Wonder Woman comics I read when I was a child. Captain Wonder.
Oh, so, Dr. Psycho, how he's changed in recent years with Harley Quinn.
Yeah. Orange is the new Black Star, Dr. Psycho. Yeah.
All right, well, let's get into this, folks. Inside, there are 4 stories, so we're going to cover them one at a time here. First one is Smacks of Vengeance. It's 8 pages. It's only 8 pages, which is hard to believe because there's so much in here. It's written and penciled by John Byrne. Inker is Terry Austin. Again, Byrne and Austin in the late 80s. Yeah. Oh, you know it's gorgeous, folks.
They weren't messing around, yeah.
Letter is Rick Parker. Colorist is Michael Rockwitz. And editor is Terry Cavanaugh. So here's the story. The story opens with a Daredevil parody character whose name is Scaredevil. He's swinging over New York City, and he's carrying a beautiful woman under his arm, and she comments about it being a blind date. Yeah, that's the kind of jokes that are in this thing, folks. Scaredevil's radar sense fails him, and keep in mind, his radar sense is literally an astral floating head of Radar O'Reilly from MASH giving Scaredevil advice.
Yeah, thank you, Shag, because I didn't know who that was. I wondered if it was like a Firestorm reference, like supposed to be Martin Stein, and having only seen MASH like twice in my life, I didn't pick up on the reference, but now that you mention it, yes, that is funny, and especially in the 80s when, or the late 80s or the early 90s, when MASH was still on a loop on TV 24 hours a day.
Now, having revealed that you've only watched MASH twice, you are now officially off any future Rob Kelly show.
Yeah, that's right. Probably, yeah. I also don't like Cheers very much. How about that?
Whoa, man.
How about that?
Swinging.
I could give you my rant, and I've watched a lot of Cheers. I could give you my rant to why Cheers is overrated, but that's a whole other thing.
Keep in mind, folks, this could be Noah just being in the spirit of What Now and parroting some things.
Yeah.
We don't know.
Yeah.
Don't write angry letters. So,
maybe,
all right.
Maybe.
So, Scaredevil, as we said, Neville's radar senses failed him, and he comes crashing face first into the side of a building. He collapses into an alley, only to be confronted by the Jokester, which is a parody of DC Comics' The Joker. More and more Marvel parody characters start to show up. We get the Mighty Sore, which is a parody of Thor. Rillamine, I can't say it. It's Wolverine. It's Wolverine. And Colosseum, who's Colossus. Now, these Marvel parodies battle against an increasing number of DC parody characters, including Sinestroni, which is Sinestro, Magilla Grodd, which is Gorilla Grodd, and is probably the most brilliant name ever.
Dressed up like Magilla Gorilla.
Yes. And Metaltoe, who's Metallo. Now, this action is ridiculously violent and funny, and the Thor parody is squashed. The Sinestro parody is sliced like salami by the Wolverine parody, and Wolverine's skin and muscle are completely ripped off his skeleton by the Gorilla Grodd parody, and so on and so on. Now, the big question is, what are these DC characters doing in the Marvel Universe? Now, at the Revengers headquarters, the Quasar parody, who's called Motorola, which is, this is an old TV joke who young people wouldn't even get nowadays. Anyway, Quasar arrives with the mastermind behind Acts of Vengeance, who's a Loki parody called Low Key, like mellow. Now, similar to the actual Acts of Vengeance crossover, Low Key has gathered villains to battle against unexpected heroes. In this case, the villains are from the DC universe to battle Marvel heroes. These DC villains have agreed to do this because they don't really have enough to do in the DC universe anymore. Apparently, the DC heroes are all turned out to be psychos and drugged out loonies. Now, the bad guys could do their usual bad guy shtick in the DC universe, but they might just be confused for being a hero when compared to the DC heroes and how awful they've become. Now, in the end, the DC villains are returned to the DC universe with the Hawkeye parody, going by the name Buckeye, saying, quote, as long as you stay in the DC universe, nobody will know what's being done to you. Nobody reads DC books anyway. Ouch!
So which that, I feel like would be more true a year or two before this, but this is less than a year after Michael Keaton Batman. I mean, DC is riding high.
But Superman is, you know, it's selling moderately well, but nothing like it will with the death of Superman. And there's Marvel's still riding the high of X-Men. I mean, think about 89. Yeah, all right. X-Men still selling like gangbusters. And Marvel was, I would assume Marvel was cleaning their clock. So what do you think of Smacks of Vengeance?
This is a lot funnier than I thought it would be.
Agreed.
I mean, this whole comic, the humor holds up. I mean, almost any type of humor from this era, you don't expect to hold up very well, especially they're talking about a comic crossover that year that like is barely remembered by comic fans. And somehow it's laugh out loud funny multiple times. You know, this is very Mad Magazine style humor. Just even calling people Sore and Scaredevil is such an obvious Mad thing, and the style it's drawn in. And I can't say I blame them for that. I mean, they were probably tapping into the exact same market that was reading Mad at the time. But it's really amazing how well it holds up. Byrne is just terrific. I mean, some of the things that made me laugh the most were visual. Sinestro's head is drawn... Someone copied like a Gil Kane's drawing of Sinestro's head and stretched it with Silly Putty and then stretched it out.
It looks literally stretched. It looks like, you know, someone had dropped it in Photoshop and did the skew on it and just went,
exactly. It's so stupid, but for some reason, it kills me. There are two panels, Captain America, a close up on his mouth when he says Revengers assemble, and you just see the spit in his mouth. It's so like the comic, I am angst filled. And then there's a shot of him in the shadows, like looking dramatic. No one knows why. And you see two photographers in front of them. Work with me, you know, holding a lighting rig up. But yeah, I mean, the Motorola joke is funny. Not every joke's great, but the visual humor is terrific. They have that. So I want to bring up this thing about the vision. When he's got this look on his face, like he's zonked out, like he's on LSD or something, and he's singing only 5 years from today, only 5 years from today, which I'm pretty sure is from a song called 7.5 Cents in The Pajama Game, a musical from the late 50s, famously movie version starred in by Doris Day. And I was trying to figure out what the connection is. Is there some joke about the vision and Pajama Game or Doris Day? I thought for a second, maybe it's, WandaVision, the first episode set in the 50s and Pajama Game's from the 50s. But WandaVision came out 30 years after this comic. So if anyone listening has any idea what the relevance of the Vision singing a song from The Pajama Game is, as a fan of both comic books and Broadway musicals, I would very much like to know.
I don't have a clue on this one. I really don't. I tried to dig into that myself and got nowhere. Again, I got to think Byrne is parodying himself at that point. So I got to think he's put something together there.
Maybe he's a musical fanatic. I don't know. I'm remembering something that struck me from back when I would read it. I am amazed how much they got away with making making fun of DC. And it's not just our distinguished competition. Ha ha. I mean, you said a parody of the Joker. That is the Joker. I mean, it's I could see, as silly as that drawing is, I could see that in like a more out there Batman comic. Sure. I mean, I don't want to say Bill Sienkiewicz.
Sam Keith.
Right. Yep. If Sienkiewicz drew a Batman comic, I could imagine the Joker looking just like that. These aren't parodies. These are those characters. I mean, Sinestroni and Metal Toe and all that. So it's very much, how did they get away? I mean, I know how they got away with it. It was satire, but it's such an obvious poking fun at them. I mean, they're flat out just lifting these characters. And I'm not upset about it. And I hope no one at DC was upset about it, but I'm just amazed that they were that brazen about it. And the last thing I want to say is you quoted, I guess it's Metal Toe saying, we came here because all the heroes are psychos and drugged out loonies who can't tell who's who.
Right.
Am I wrong? But is that the direction Marvel moved in the 90s? Like, you think Marvel in the 90s, you think the Punisher murdering people and Wolverine slicing people up. I feel like by the time we got to the mid 90s, that described Marvel a lot better than DC.
It could be. You definitely the psycho part. But I know what they're talking about, though. In 1989, it's actually a really good observations on DC, because all DC's pushing is Batman at this point. Yeah. And it's become so dark. And you talk about psychos. Well, they just did the Arkham Asylum hardcover with Grant Morrison.
Yep.
And drugged out loonies, they just did Batman the Cult, where Batman was brainwashed and subjected to a bunch of drugs. So that totally tracks with what they're trying to do, which I thought was pretty funny. But yeah, Marvel has no room to judge people. I mean, even in this issue alone, they make fun of Wolverine and the Punisher. So they got no room.
They were already their world beater characters. So whatever, it's in good humor. It's not that scathing, but it really amazes me how much they poke at DC. I mean, I guess this was the era where they weren't doing DC and Marvel team ups, and maybe this is a reason why, you know?
Well, to address that a little bit, I'm going to combine a couple things you said. You mentioned Mad Magazine, and then you mentioned about the poking fun. Well, Mad Magazine at this point was published by Warner Brothers, which was owned by DC, and they would do some Marvel stuff from time to time. So I got to think that it was sort of a little, you're going to do it, so we're going to do it kind of thing. I got to imagine where some of that was coming from. And
And
you're right. A lot of this art, I mean, Byrne really was channeling some of those great Mad Magazine artists. But it's also John Byrne at the height of his powers. So, like, even the Scaredevil scene, like, it's goofy, cartoony. But damn, the art still looks great.
Yeah, it's very good. It's funny because I was thinking, like, why didn't DC have a comic like this at the time? And I guess Mad was their equivalent. But I also wondered if this is something like just something DC wouldn't do in those days. I mean, part of why I think Marvel became the hot hip thing in the 60s is they had that whole Smiling Stan and the soapbox thing. So they always seem more chummy with the readers, for lack of a better term. And maybe this is more, I mean, 20 years later, and I think DC wasn't completely alien to that idea, but I definitely think they could come off as more humorless than Marvel. So maybe that accounts for it. But now that I think about it, Mad was their it was just a little more, you know, ghettoed off from the regular comics about all sorts of stuff.
Well, and at the time, it was probably selling a lot better than any Marvel or DC comic, too, because Mad was in grocery stores and everywhere else.
Yeah.
Now, DC did take a cracks at humor, just not necessarily poking fun at Marvel. They would do Ambush Bug.
And
Lobo was not too far down the road from this and things like that. So they took shots at humor, but just in their own way.
Yeah. Oh, Ambush Bug is so good. Oh, my God.
Oh, love it. Absolutely love
it. Yeah. It's great. It was great. Yeah, this story's great. It's a lot of fun. It's really fun.
I'll add a couple things. Like, I've always referred to Acts of Vengeance as Smacks of Vengeance, specifically because of this issue. And I've always loved it. I always thought it was hilarious. It's more fun to say than Acts of Vengeance. So thank you, for adding that to my lexicon. And Byrne layers so many jokes into this thing. Like, there are so many little tiny signs in the background. Now, some of this may have been Terry Austin as the inker. I don't know. But there's these tiny little written signs, especially all over page two, which are like in the background. Like, when you see the jokester there, someone's holding up a sign in the background that says, Michael Keaton? With exclamation points and question marks, as if to say, really? As Batman? Because, you know, this is only, you know, 6 months afterwards. And then they show a close-up of the jokester, and he's wearing a button that says Buster Poindexter Fan Club, which fits because he looks a lot like him.
I never got that connection that the Joker looks like David Johansen, but I guess there's a resemblance there. Yep. So, okay.
And I'm not going to go through all of these. I'm just going to mention one more. On the background, there's a sign that says Post No Bills, which, you know, that you see a lot. Right. But right next to it says Post No Ted. And so it's celebrating Bill and Ted, which is hilarious. Now, there was one deep cut I did catch in the background of – don't know, one of these pages, you've got these two little heads talking. It's these two like silhouetted people talking, and they're going back and forth. Here it is on page 5 at the top. And one guy's saying, Kiron? The other guy's saying, no, Kiron. And Kiran? No, Kiron. And it's back and forth. Somebody's clearly not getting this word right. That is a deep cut joke about John Byrne's stepson. John Byrne's stepson at the time was a young boy named Kieran Dwyer. Well, he's gone on now to be a comic book famous on his own. But yeah, it's like Byrne was trying to, make jokes about how to pronounce his stepson's name here in the comic. Probably delighted his stepson because his stepson was a big comic fan at the time.
So Kieran Dwyer wasn't drawing yet at the time?
From what I've read, he was young when Byrne met the mother. Okay. But you know what? Maybe he was starting to draw by this point. I know he was drawing in the 90s, I think.
Right.
I don't know.
When I saw that panel, I didn't know that Kieran, you know what? I think I'd heard that he was John Byrne's stepson, but I didn't remember it. So my assumption was like, oh, maybe Kieran Dwyer was drawing Captain America at the time. But no, that's not the case, is it?
I you know what? You may be right. Maybe he was. Maybe he was already in the business. I don't know.
I may be crazy.
At the end of the day, it's Byrne trying to help people pronounce his stepson's name is what it was. So one of my favorite bits in here is there's a big joke about Vision and Scarlet Witch, and they're waiting for them. And they're like, oh, there, through the window, flying towards us, a female form clad in all red and a pale ghostly male figure. And in flies through the window, the Harvey characters, Casper and Wendy, the good little witch. I about fell out of my chair. I was laughing so hard when that came on.
And man, do they look like they're straight out of a Harvey comic.
Yeah.
The way Byrne draws them. Like, perfect. It's hilarious.
They kick them out and they make a star line, a Star Comics reference, which is great.
By the way, according to Wikipedia, Kieran Dwyer worked on such comic book titles as Captain America from 1987 to 1990.
Dude! Wow.
His first published work was a Batman comic from 1987.
I had no idea he was old enough to. Okay, well, there you go.
If you believe Wikipedia, we could look it up elsewhere.
Hang on, I'll fix it. And then another one, I love this bit too, where Quasar's symbol, he's got that giant like Adidas symbol, on his chest, and Iron Man adjusts the vertical and horizontal hold to make it solid, which just, I don't know why, it just tickles me and cracks my junk up. Now, I'm not going through and reading you every single stupid joke, because there's a stupid joke every panel, folks. I don't think I'm overdoing it. Believe me, I only picked out a couple. There's a nice dig at DC when they refer to Crisis on Infinite Jerks, which is pretty fitting.
It's a very mad joke, Mad Magazine joke. Yeah.
And I think the most important thing to walk away from is neither one of us have read Acts of Vengeance, or at least I said I haven't. And I could follow the plot of this issue or this story and how it relates to that story perfectly fine. So that's a well-constructed story then.
Yeah. Something I remember from at the time is like it struck this great balance of being very inside baseball and these jokes for comic geeks. But like you didn't have to know the specific story they're talking about to get the joke. They're making fun of DC in general. They're making fun of Marvel in general. Yeah, they're really doing a good job of making you feel like you're in the club without having to be a super uber nerd and get every single reference to feel like you're in the club. So, in the days before internet chat rooms, this book served a solid social purpose, I guess you could say.
Yeah, no, that's fair. Mm-hmm. So all told, I enjoyed Smacks of Vengeance. If nothing else, it gives me another chance to say Smacks of Vengeance, Smacks of Vengeance as often as I can. Were you happy with it at the end of it?
Oh, yeah. It's a great story. A little part was like, hey, why are you making fun of DC? I love those comics in those days. But 2 seconds later, I got over myself and realized I'm a grown adult at this point.
So lots of fun. Really enjoyed this. And we'll post a couple of pages of this on our gallery, which is firewaterpodcast.com. And you go to the FW Presents page. Now, we're going to continue going through the rest of the issue. But that really kind of concludes your Acts of Vengeance podcast crossover part. But we're going to keep going with the origin of the Pulverizer. You want to take us through it?
Yes, of the Pulverizer. It's 8 pages, and it is co-written by Doug Rice. And when I saw that name, I'm like, isn't that the dude who drew the Manhunter series, the Mark Shaw Manhunter series?
And that's what I was thinking.
He's an artist. He later draws another story in this comic, and co-written with Hilary Barda. Hilary's a man, and I knew him who also drew this. And I knew Hilary Barda as the artist behind the Plastic Man miniseries from around this time.
Right.
Which is very good. And he's got a real good cartoony style. Basically, the plot is the Pulverizer has been appearing in What The since issue number 1. This story is a goofy retelling of the Punisher origin. Instead of the mobsters killing his family in a park, they kick his dog. and he decides to become the Pulverizer. He settles on the skull motif for his costume after his brain, his head, his skull needs to be amputated. When he hears the doctor saying that, he decides that he needs a skull theme. By the way, his skull needs to be amputated because when he's sitting brooding in his study, thinking criminals are a superstitious, cowardly lot, in the window flies a brick that hits him in the head. Ha ha ha. So Frank Casket is led on a hilarious path of revenge against organized crime. And it ends, of course, with the Pulverizer confronting the mobster who kicked his dog and kicking the mobster's dog into the sky. And then the story follows with the Pulverizer's fun page with a very funny picture of the Pulverizer screaming in vengeance, shooting bullets against a wall, and it becomes a connect the dots. And Shag, since you actually ruined your comic to do this, do you want to reveal what image is portrayed when the dots are connected?
To be fair, I photocopied it and then drew on the photocopy. Right. But yes, yeah, when you connect all 90 dots, what you get is a, you know what connect the dots is, people. Anyway, it makes up the Batman symbol with a crossed out circle around it, like the Ghostbusters red crossed out circle. So it's basically it's saying no Batman is what it's saying. Because it even says at the bottom here, connect the dots, the numbered order to reveal something we'd all like to see, which means no more Batman, which is hilarious, especially in 1989.
After one movie.
Dude, you remember Batmania. It was insane.
Oh, yeah, it was great. It was awesome.
Well, this is a cute story. I thought it was a lot of fun. I'll just say it. Out of all the stories in here, this is probably my least favorite. It's not bad, but it's probably the least favorite. But the art is really fantastic.
Oh my God.
I guess that means you like it. Okay.
Oh, yes. My God, you are correct. No, I agree with you. The story's a little thin. There are a couple decent jokes, but man, is the art terrific.
Yeah, it really is.
God. There's a panel, my favorite panel, where, you know, he's hunting down criminals. And you see he's literally holding a guy by the scruff of his neck, his jacket, and he's sticking the gun literally in his mouth. It looks like the gun is pressed against the back of this dude's throat.
Right.
And not only, I'm guessing this dude is Edgar Bergen because he's holding a Charlie McCarthy dummy. It says, to get information, I hit the street. I hit the bricks. I hit some people. I was making progress. Where's Bulldog? Talk. And then the dummy says, you dummy, he can't talk with a gun in his mouth. And it's not just the look on the guy's face with a gun in his mouth, the look on the dummy's face. It's the look. First of all, Pulverizer is like jacked up, way ahead of his times, 90 musculature.
That's true.
He's got this look in his face. One eye is wide open. One eye is closed shut. He's got a frown. The forelock hanging down in front of his nose. It's just so funny, so much life, so much character. It's great. This guy, Hilary Barda, I gotta reread that Plastic Man thing. Yeah, the art far outstrips the story here. Panel after panel is just a delight to look at.
My favorite is page 12, top right-hand panel, where it's the Batman brooding scene where he's sitting in front of the fireplace talking about cowardly and superstitious lot. He just looks so awesome. And you want to talk about looking like Mad Magazine art. I mean, this really looks like a Superman story from Mad Magazine or something. It looks gorgeous.
It's such a clear parody of, you know, you imagine he swiped it from like Detective 20. Well, when was Batman's origin? Detective 30 or something.
Yeah, something
like literally the first time we saw that origin. It's really nicely done. So yeah, the story isn't the best in the world, but the art makes it completely worthwhile.
Yeah, lots of fun. So awesome. All right, let's move on. So we get into some ads, which I almost passed right over. I mean, they look so legit. I like was just flipping and I'm like, all right, moving on. And then I saw, wait, what was that? I went back. So why don't you describe this ad?
So, yes, it's more Mighty Marvel merchandising, new for 1989. And there are three items. There's a Spidey-Man hazardous material survival suit. And apparently this is something to wear to protect you from the dangers in the world. Why not protect yourself the Marvel way with a Spidey-Man hazardous material survivor suit? Hang out at the local slag heap in comfort and style. Also available in the following styles, Mighty Snore, Mr. Fantastical, and Scarlet Witch. And I don't know how one's supposed to wear this. I don't understand what this is supposed to look like. But it just looks like a metal contraption with a picture of Spider-Man, a little keypad, some dynamite with a timer on it. I don't know if that's supposed to be a bra, those two circles the front. I don't know what it is. So I kind of feel like I'd rather have an idea how one's supposed to wear it. So that kind of impedes the joke a little. The second one is the Incredible Bulk Air Sickness Bag. And it looks like a big paper bag with a picture of the Hulk grimacing on it. And my favorite joke is it's available in gray, green, and plaid. And it's gamma ray treated fibers. And the third one is the Electrico Vermin Zapper. It's a very dangerous looking bug zapper with the bouncing head of Electrico, the Spider-Man villain. And it just says how dangerous it is and will really kill the bugs. And the joke I like most is not recommended for households with children under 40 years of age.
I think on this page, my favorite bit is the Hulk air sickness bag, specifically that his, it's like you said, it's just a paper bag, but his ears stick out. Like how ridiculous would that look in real life is for these paper ears to stick out. And then the hair that is actually like three dimensional sticking out over the edge of the bag. Just, it looks hysterical to me. Otherwise it's just like a lunch sack.
Was the Hulk gray at the time in his comics?
Probably. Yeah. Yeah. He would have been gray about this time. Yeah. On his way back to being green.
Yes. It ain't easy. And then the second page of this, the last page of this is the first joke doesn't really work for me. The first part, hey kids, get this neat 3-man tank for only $5.99. And in some very hard to read small type, it's basically a real tank that you can buy for $5.99. And then below that, much funnier, this coin could be worth millions. And, you know, those who remember old comic ads that would show this quarter might be in your pocket. It's worth $10,000. It never was. It was a huge tease. And it looks like an old quarter, but instead of George Washington, it's Bozo the Clown. The Bozo thing, and it's bald, and it says Bozo. And I'm not going to read the text partly because it's so small and hard to read, but it's got a very dry humor here. Has several astounding properties. For instance, this coin was minted in AD 79, literally 1700 years before the creation of the United States.
Yeah, it's found in the Roman city of Pompeii, which is hilarious.
Found in the Roman city of Pompeii. And the only other thing I'll point out as a former grammarian is both items on this page, both the tank and the coin, use the word minuscule, and they misspell it the same way in both places.
Wow.
So I just want to point that out. It is like minus, M-I-N-U-S, not mini, not M-I-N-I-S. So you learn something on the Fire and Water podcast each episode.
The irony is they printed that so small, it was minuscule and impossible to read.
Yes, it was minuscule. Yes. Or maybe not ironic. So I really like that. That reminds me of like the old ads in the Simpsons comics or an ambush bug, you know, making fun of all the ads you always saw in comics for the 70s and 80s. Great source of humor, and they do it pretty well here.
And that's why I almost missed it, because the first one looks so legit. I was just zooming through. I like the army, the tank thing. The gist of it is the army has declined to purchase these tanks because of a design defect. So they're just selling them to kids now, which cracks me up. And Bozo, timely, we just lost one of our one of the beloved Bozo actors. So, all right, the next one is called Soar Wants a Haircut, and this is all about the Mighty Thor, obviously. So it's only four pages, written by Howard Mackey. A penciler is Adam Blaustein. Inker is Christopher Ivey. Letter is Brad Joyce. Colorist is Ron Stern. The story here is the Mighty Soar is in desperate need of a haircut and demands to see this barber named Mr. P. Afterwards, after Soar gets his haircut, he is very unhappy with his new hairstyle, which is very short, it's brushed back in the middle, and it's flared out at the temples. And it turns out that the barber shop Soar picked as a certain type of clientele, including folks like Star Fox, Quicksilver, Beast, Wolverine, and the villain Owl. And the stylist himself is revealed to be the Space Phantom. So for those of you who know your Marvel history, you've kind of maybe glommed onto what's going on here. Soar's hair has been styled like Star Fox and Quicksilver and Beast, Wolverine. They all have this certain hairstyle. So after destroying the barbershop, the Mighty Soar decides to try his luck elsewhere. And as the story ends, Soar's entering another barbershop, this time occupied by folks like the Kingpin, the Absorbing Man, and the Vulture. You can see another joke happening there. This one, okay, it's only four pages. It's super short, in and out. This one legitimately cracked me up. When they showed the Space Phantom, who is such a deep cut. I mean, he's an early Avengers villain. He's rarely showed up. But yes,
never
all
heard
these,
of this character. Never
really? I think it's Avengers number two, if I remember right. Wow. But all these characters have the same ridiculous haircut. I mean, they all do. And I about fell out of my chair laughing so hard when the big reveal of everybody with that haircut. It was hilarious to me.
This story is pretty good. I mean, it seems like a one joke thing, like, hey, Soar's getting a haircut and he ends up looking like these other people. But again, it's so different from Hilary Barter. I like the art, and I had never heard of Adam Blaustein. Mm. And I looked that name up. Madeline Blaustein, Maddie Blaustein, is a transgender woman who did a lot of anime voiceovers, and before transitioning under the name Adam, was an artist for both Marvel and DC. Drew some milestone comics and drew even some of your beloved Impact comics, Shag.
Really?
After leaving Milestone, she served as creative director for Weekly World News. That's awesome.
Oh my gosh.
there's a Wikipedia page for her. But yeah, I mean, I like this art. It's funny. It's the kind of art, though, I imagine if she was drawing, you know, more quote unquote serious comics, wouldn't use this style.
Sure.
You know, so I'm kind of curious what her work looked like. But the story's cute. It gets in and out. And that last panel is really funny when you see all the bald guys.
Yeah.
And Vulture's got this great look on his face. He's winking at the camera.
Right.
Like it's Thor. It's Thor about to walk in. He's like, I could do no worse than the last. And you're like about to see his reaction when he sees the bald guys in there. So cute, quick story. I feel like Whatha was really good at that, getting in and out with these little insignificant but fun little tales.
And tying together all the people with these ridiculous hairstyles that I think everyone at one point or another has looked at these hairs and gone, what? But then showing them all fit together. It's very cute.
Yeah, what was that about? Yeah, but who knows?
All right, let's get into the last one here, folks.
Yes.
Adventure into Fear, featuring the Man-Thang and Swamp-Thang.
I think you should say it's Adventure into Boredom, and Boredom is crossed out and Fear is written on top of it.
That is a good clarification. Thank you so much. I was pulling from Mike's Amazing World of Comics, so I didn't even put that in here. So good call. Written by Peter Gillis. Penciler is Doug Rice, that name again. Inker is Hilary Barta, that name again. Letterer Brad Joyce, colorist is Kelly Corvius. Now, the story begins with Abigail Arcane. Now, she isn't actually named that, but we'll just call her Abigail for these purposes.
Say it, Shag. Say it. I got to hear it, man.
All right. Well, under the pencil and inks of Doug Rice and Hilary Barta, without a doubt, this woman is smoking hot.
So, oh, my God.
And it's...
It's not even funny.
Right. I mean, it's clearly intentional. I mean, as I mentioned, the women are insanely sexy in these comics. The men are ridiculously over-muscled. It's all on purpose. So it's just for part of the gag.
Yeah.
So
absolutely.
As the story begins, Abigail has run away from Swamp Thang. She is weary of his pretentious, pseudo-profound, ecological horse hockey. And she finds comfort in the arms of the Man-Thang. Swamp Thang, who's now a burned-out hippie who's high in his own tubers, is resigned to losing Abigail, but the Man-Thang stands in his way. Man-Thang wants revenge for Swamp-Thang stealing his origin. Now, in traditional Marvel style, they fight, and the Swamp-Thang bursts into flames as, quote, whatever knows overwriting burns at the touch of the Man-Thang. and Abigail feels sorry for Swamp-Thang, and then they are reunited. The story ends as Man-Thang sinks into the swamp, eventually tiring of the caption box narrator and tells him to shut up. So, oh my gosh, what'd you think of this one, buddy?
It's a great story. It's, again, the art is amazing.
Yes.
Oh my God, this art is good. I mean, you know, so many Man-Thing and Swamp-Thing stories, the detail and the plants and the vegetation and all that, but it's just fantastic. The detail here is great. It's got a real smooth, cartoony style. I remember really liking that Manhunter series with Doug Rice.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what happened to him, but I remember loving his work. And of course, Abigail is just amazing looking. But what I like most about the story, I mentioned before how I loved how Whatha was so inside baseball. And I haven't read that many Man-Thing comics. I haven't read that many Swamp-Thing comics. But I still got the parody of both the style of Steve Gerber writing Man-Thing and the style of Alan Moore writing Swamp-Thing. You know, every Man-Thing story was some crazy people find their way in the swamp and half of them are awful rednecks or monsters or murderers. And they encounter the Man-Thing. The Man-Thing stumbles upon it and silently like leads them to their doom or saves their life or something. And then Swamp Thing and Abigail, of course, with this bizarre, twisted, drugged out, psychotic romance. And the dialogue is so detailed. There's a panel. I don't know why this killed me. Maybe because I was high at the time. But there's a panel on the first panel on page 28. It's a close up of Swamp Thing's face and he's crying.
Yes.
And for some reason, he says, all right, honeysuckle, all roads one travel come to an end, even those we didn't realize we were walking down. And it's not even that bizarre thing to say. It's just, I don't know. It's just so pitch perfect getting at that Alan Moore pretension.
Yes, it is. Absolutely is.
Yeah, this is a funny, funny, weird story. These characters that I've always like, I don't really get them. Like, how do you get a whole series about Man-Thing? How does this guy have adventures? He just lies there. He just stands there and shambles and falls apart. But somehow, if you could get like a whatever 8-page story, funny story out of it, it shows that there's more of these characters than one might think at first. And of course, the last panel, after Man-Thing sinks into the swamp, who is left there? But one of the characters from Pogo, Walt Kelly's Pogo. So very cute, again, inside baseball reference. So good job.
Well, in addition to the Pogo one, earlier in the story, off camera, you see some word balloons leading off that you hear a voice say, "You must do or do not. There is no try."
Oh, yes. Yeah.
So obviously, yes, they're really trying to hit all the swamp creatures with that one.
Yes. And of course, back then, it was, you know, Star Wars wasn't as universally known by every human being who's ever walked the face of the earth. So a bit more of a deep cut.
Yep. It's you nailed most of the things I want to say here. I mean, like, this is such a glorious parody. Again, Alan Moore, Steve Gerber. I do love Man-Thing. I've read the whole first volume of Essential Man-Thing, which is like a zillion stories. And I really, really got into it. You know, and you mentioned the art. Like, Mike Plug was an amazingly detailed artist. Steve Tottleben over on Swamp Thing's an amazing detailed artist. So, yes, getting these guys to draw this and the just overwritten caption boxes, I just couldn't stop laughing because it got crazier and crazier and crazier. And the caption boxes get bigger and bigger and they take up more landscape. They also touch on another thing, too, which is they explore the origin controversy. So some people know this, some people don't. But Man-Thing was published just a couple of months before Swamp Thing. I mean, just barely. And obviously, Swamp Thing was a much bigger breakout character. Now, given that Swamp Thing and Man-Thing were created almost simultaneously, the weirdest aspect of this is that the two creators, Len Wein and Jerry Conway, they were roommates at the time.
Yeah.
So this, you mentioned being high. That's actually been my story all along, is I think Jerry and Len... you know, it's the 70s. We're smoking a bowl. And they're like, dude, what if like plants were alive and stuff? And then they each went, or what if our dope was alive? And they each went back to their rooms and wrote the story, I think is what probably happened there.
So. Yes. The characters came out of one night of smoking weed and watching Star Trek and staring at their feet and eating donuts and Doritos. Yeah.
I think that's exactly what happened.
Yeah. In the What the Tradition, there are lots of little side jokes and comments. Abigail's running to the swamp and there's a sign that says Howe's Marsh, H-O-W-E apostrophe S, like belonging to the person Howe. Howe's Swamp this way. Howe's Bayou. You know, the silly puns that are funny in the dad joke way.
Right.
And then they do a really good job with the onomatopoeias, you know, the sound effect lettering.
Yes.
Man-Thing grabs her and says squinch. And then she's running around and says slosh, sachet, slog, shamble, schlep, slog.
I did even notice some of those. Oh, that is awesome.
The detail is terrific. There's a thing here. I wonder what this is. Abigail is standing on a rock and pointing accusatorily at Swamp Thing, possibly the hottest drawing of her in the whole thing. And there's like what looks like a little like submarine, like periscope pointing up that says Hollywood, Hollywood. Do you know what that is?
I was thinking it was just a reference because it looks a little Marilyn Monroe on the Windy Great a little bit.
Oh, yeah.
It's kind of what I was thinking, but I wasn't entirely sure. But that's where my brain went.
Of course, that's brilliant. it's a very well-drawn, very funny comic. And it's amazing because I'm sure a lot of people viewed What The as like this throwaway joke thing.
Sure.
But you mentioned it from the beginning. You know, Stan Lee worked on this. Byrne worked on multiple issues. You know, they didn't skimp on the talent for this thing on any level. So another example of this is really impressive.
Yeah. I got to say, I'm pretty sure this is my favorite story of the four. I mean, Smacks of Vengeance is what brought us here, but given my love for Man-Thing and Swamp Thing, Man-Thang and Swamp Thang. this is actually my favorite of the whole book.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. I can't decide if I like this art or the Pulverizer art better. but yeah, this is definitely, the story here is better than the Pulverizer for sure.
So I should say there is one more thing, or two more things. There's a one pager. It's an ad, and it's supposed to look very dramatic, Marvel, like 1950s, 1960s monster comic style. And it says "Strange Tales of Whaling," and there's a giant white whale coming at this boat, and he's got it, you know, teeth open and everything. And it says "Moby," which is M-M-O-B-Y, the creature that stalked the seas, sent shattering symbolism as you like it. Yeah. Another great white hope from the House of Ideas just cracked me up. Obviously, this is a play on Moby Dick. It's so funny.
What is Moby? I thought at first, like, 7 years too early? Is it making fun of Mbop by Hansen? Like, it's M-M-O-B-Y. Like, I don't get that joke.
Oh, it's just in the style of the way they would spell monster names in those old monster comics.
Oh,
sure.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. Yeah. All right. Yeah, okay. I see it now. It's what if one of those old Marvel monster comics, you made Moby Dick into one of those.
Exactly.
All right. Yep. Yeah, this page didn't really work for me, but, you know, it's one page, so who cares?
The symbolism joke just made me fall out.
That's the best joke. Yes. That's the best joke. Yeah, yeah.
And the last thing is, on the last page, is they have the hammer that made a god out of Don. And this is a Charles Atlas parody with Donald Blake, yeah. Jane Foster, Thor, and Loki. It's cute. It goes maybe a little too long, but it's definitely a good parody of the Charles Atlas ad, which works well.
I would agree, except they do parodies of the Charles Atlas ad in multiple issues of What the?
Oh.
And, you know, I leafed through some other issues in preparation for this. And, you know, I didn't look closely at many of them. So I think this one is better in concept than execution. I mean, okay. I certainly like the idea of making fun of the Charles Atlas ads because they were everywhere and they're stupid because there's no way this thing worked. I mean, do you know anyone who actually ordered it? Dynamic tension.
You haven't seen my physique, sir.
Yes, I have not seen your physique. I hear about how much Mountain Dew you drink. I can only imagine. But you did skip over something. You skipped over the letters page, which is bullish bulletins.
Well, there was no Frederick Jameson. So what's the point?
Yeah, no Freddie Jameson. But it's not bad. It's funny. You know, they had this thing in a series where they had these little boxes, like a profile of a Marvel artist or writer. And they have fake people. So this one is a crazy woman, and there's a little drawing of her in a straitjacket in a padded cell sitting next to an old 1989 era Macintosh. And it's not bad. It's pretty funny. You know, I'm kind of curious who wrote this.
It would have been fun at the time to definitely troll through these letters pages and keep up with it. So, yeah, good stuff.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. So, yeah, so this is a hilarious comic.
So a couple of quick thoughts as we wrap up the issue here. Like, lots and lots of grown up jokes in this thing. Like, you know, if your target's, you know, 13-year-olds, there's a lot of drug use in this. When Abigail's being carried off by Swamp Thing, she makes a comment about use the Virginia Creeper on her again, which is like, whoa, you know, Moby Dick and the symbolism. It just like there's some definitely humor in here for adults. And it made me love it that much more.
Yeah. But, you know, I don't know about now, but certainly as we were growing up, comics were, you know, the smart kids read comics.
Yeah.
And I learned so much from comics. I learned so much vocabulary. I learned so many concepts. You know, aimed at 13-year-olds is exactly right. You're about to become a teenager. There's really nothing. This is the way to learn about these things, I think. So this seems perfectly suited to that age group. Why not have adult things? I mean, if we wanted kid stuff, we'd read Casper and Wendy, right?
That's true.
So, which were still available at the time. I'm pretty sure they're not available now, but I could be wrong.
Sort of like Deadpool. They said that, you know, you had to be 17-year-old to see it, but you had to be, like 12-year-old to get the jokes or something like that.
Yeah, that sounds about right. Yeah, yep. Totally.
So one other comment about Mad Magazine. So we've been talking about Magazine. I just want to tie all that together. So Mad Magazine at this point was only being published about 8 times a year. But again, this is very much in that vein. And DC was publishing it. The original publisher was William Gaines, who was the co-creator of EC Comics.
Yes.
He died in 1992. Now, that was just after this point. So at that point, Mad was more absorbed in the Warner Brothers structure. And sadly, now Mad is only available by subscription in comic shops. You
that
can't get it
so,
in newsstands or grocery stores anymore.
Terrible.
And it mostly
who's gonna discover it that way? That's
right.
Stupid.
And it mostly consists of reprint material anyway now.
Oh,
so it's gotta be just the hardcore fans. That makes me so sad.
Yeah, yeah. Side note, well, I did not know this until after he was dead. William Gaines was my cousin. He was
what?
My second cousin once removed. Yes. My aunt, my father's sister, went to a big massive family reunion in 1994, and when she came, but they gave everyone this big printout of like a giant family tree. Mm-hmm. And at the time I glanced at it and I'm like, oh my God, is that the same William Gaines? I saw Max Gaines was his father. And I'm like, yeah. And he's listed there. And I found that printout again, not last summer, the summer before when I visited my parents and we're digging stuff out of storage. And I was like, oh yeah, William Gaines is our cousin. I was telling my nephews now, like, we're related to the guy who founded Mad Magazine. We're related to his dad, who was one of the inventors of comics, you know?
Wow.
So yes, his grandfather and my great grandfather were brothers. So I am related to William Gaines. There
you're an heir to the empire of EC Comics and
yes.
Mad Magazine. And look what you've done under your leadership. They've both fallen apart.
It's amazing. It's amazing.
It's entirely your fault.
God, that is so sad that Mad, because I feel like the way you discover Mad when you're a smart ass dork, like you or I were, or most of our listeners probably are, Because your parents drag you somewhere, you're bored, they need to keep you occupied, you're at the magazine store or whatever, you pick up something to read. Yep. And maybe it's a comic, that's how a lot of us discover comics, but half the time, it was Mad Magazine. We're at the airport, our flight is late, you got to keep this kid busy for 2 hours. This is in the day before iPads, before smartphones. Buy him a Mad Magazine. That's how we discover this stuff.
And you're right, it was embedded with a lot more mature humor. I mean, I remember spending a lot of time reading Mad Magazine, trying to interpret what the jokes meant and figure out what that was in real life.
Yeah, and that's how we learn things, and that's how we became dorks. We're now inheritors of American culture, so we win in the end. Revenge of the Nerds.
Without the creepy sexual politics 30 years.
Right.
Yeah.
All right, so as we finish What Then Number 6, it is time for us to pick the funniest moment in the issue. Each one of us is going to pick one moment that we feel is the best. Noah, you're the guest, so what do you want to pick?
I am going to go with that panel of, now that I look at it again, that panel of the pulverizer threatening Edgar Bergen, or generic ventriloquist with a dummy that looks like Charlie McCarthy. The detail in his face is just hilarious. It's just, it's all packed there in that one little panel. And I find ventriloquist dummies inherently funny, more than creepy, unlike most people.
Right.
It's telling that it's visual. All my favorite jokes in your visual. That, Sinestro's head, that panel of Swamp Thing, I can't explain why it's funny other than, you know, marijuana. But I'm going to say, if I got to pick one, I'm going with that panel of the pulverizer.
All right. And I will show you, to reveal how culturally bankrupt I am, I had to ask Noah who Bergen was. So there we go.
Have you heard of Charlie McCarthy?
Once you pointed out the doll, I recognized the doll. I didn't know his name was Charlie McCarthy, but I absolutely recognized the doll. Yes. So
The irony of Edgar Bergen and Charlie McCarthy is they were the biggest show on radio. The ventriloquist act was the biggest show on radio.
That is insane. Oh my gosh.
Yeah, true. Yeah.
I had a really hard time picking a single moment. I for a long time, I was going to go with the Magilla Grodd skinning Wolverine, which was just like so shocking. Like he just literally rips off all the skin and muscle and just leaves a skeleton there, which was crazy. The reveal of Space Phantom cracked me up a lot in the haircut one. But ultimately, I'm just going to, it's not necessarily one panel, but the overwritten caption boxes of the Man-Thang story is my absolute favorite. That is what brings me the most joy in this issue.
Yeah, no, they're pretty funny. And I feel like if I read them more carefully, I might agree with you. So, maybe I'll reread them and you'll put a patch on this episode and correct my inaccurate assessment. I'm sure that's worth your effort, Shaq.
Oh, I would love to go back and re-edit this thing. What? You're freaking crazy. But anyway, so folks, that is What the Number 6, a healthy, loving, integral part of the Axe of Vengeance crossover. Yeah. So, everyone's collection is complete by adding this to your collection. So make sure you get it, or maybe you just like to laugh. That's maybe the better way to go. And yes, this is part of the Merry Marvel Marching Society podcast crossover of 2021. You can follow all of the Axe of Vengeance stories throughout this crossover. In fact, Ryan Daly for here on our network just hosted an episode right here on FW Presents all about Avengers 312 and 313. So when you're done listening to these two episodes of FW Presents, go check out our friends who are also part of the Smacks of Vengeance crossover, such as Third Degree Burn,
Back to the Bins Avengers Spotlight,
Coffee and Comics,
Comic Book Time Machine,
Doom Speak,
Fan Holes Podcast,
Head Speaks,
Into the Weird,
Jeff and Rick Present Unpacking the Power of Power Pack,
Justice Not Entirely Dissimilar
to Lightning, a Thunderbolts podcast,
Long Box Crusade,
Married with Comics,
The Quantum Cast,
Resurrections, an Adam Warlock podcast,
Rolled Spine Podcast,
Views from the Long Box.
So check out all of those shows for the Merry Marvel Marching Society podcast crossover of 2021. Noah, thank you so much for being here. This has been an absolute blast. I'm glad we finally got a chance to chat.
Yeah, this is great.
This has been absolutely worth it. If you would, please tell folks where they can find you on the interwebs.
So I am about two things. I run a company called, as Shag mentioned, The Big Quiz Thing. We do corporate and private and occasionally public trivia events, these days virtual, hopefully in person again by the end of the year. You can find out all about us at bigquizthing.com. Follow us on Facebook or Twitter, technically Instagram. And I also do my own podcast, I Don't Get It, the pop culture Get Off My Lawn cast with Mr. Bill Scurry. We are both rapidly desiccating mid-40s curmudgeons. And every week we look at something that's hot and new and we try to make sense of it and decide whether we understand it, whether we don't, whether we hate it, whether we don't hate it, whatever. And I will say, actually, this weekend, we're planning a comic book themed episode because we're going to look at WandaVision, which I'm going to say we're both going to give a thumbs up to. Some of the things we really like, some of the things we hate. So yeah, check us out. You can get it on SoundCloud, Google Play, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, and you can find all our early episodes there. And also we're on Facebook, I Don't Get It Podcast. And also I Don't Get It at Noah and Bill Show on Twitter. Wow, what a job I did there.
You are just everywhere anybody wants to be. That's fantastic.
I'm two places, Shag. I'm two places. And it's all virtual in 2021. How about that?
Well, again, thank you so much, Noah. I really appreciate this.
Thank you, sir.
I've really enjoyed our conversation, and I really hope we get a chance to podcast again.
I'd love to.
Just don't bring that damn Blue Devil ruining comic to my house.
I will not tell you all my other theories about my Blue Devil hatred and all my why I don't like Cheers and all the things that are going to get me in trouble with various FW podcasters.
Well, there's only one way to respond to all those comments you just made, and I think I just have to say, what the?
Poor Peter Parker was pitiful. Couldn't have been any shyer. Mary Jane still wouldn't notice him, even if his hair was on fire.